When news breaks, go beyond the headlines with the new MSNBC app.
New developments in the legal drama surrounding former President Donald Trump.
Get real-time analysis from live blogs to in-depth essays, video highlights from your favorite shows and hosts.
Lots of news of all kinds going on right now.
And the latest updates on the 2024 election.
The rematch is on. It's Trump-Biden Part 2.
Go beyond the what to understand the why. Download the app now at msnbc.com/app.
It's a confusing time when Best Buy has tougher health rules than the CDC. You know? That's right. Somehow CDC guidelines have become more confusing than a parking sign in New York City. It's like, can I stand here?
No, you can stand here on Tuesday.
Oh. So the director said that for the new guidelines to work, the CDC is asking Americans to be honest about their vaccination status. Really? People can't even tell the truth in their Tinder profiles. You're gonna say, really? Come on. That's it. It was a picture of me.
I literally was in a Best Buy yesterday, and yes, it was very strict. Mask guidelines may be getting more confusing even as the pandemic shows signs of abating. For the first time, COVID cases are down in all 50 states. Now the Biden administration is poised to send more vaccines overseas to countries that are desperate for them. Good morning and welcome to Morning Joe. It's Monday, May 18th. Along with Joe, Willie, and me, we have Chief White House Correspondent for the New York Times, Peter Baker, White House Correspondent for Politico and co-author of The Playbook, Eugene Daniels. He's also an MSNBC contributor, and former Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman of California. She's a distinguished fellow and president emerita at the Wilson Center and author of the new book, Insanity Defense, Why Our Failure to Confront Hard National Security Problems Makes Us Less Safe. And what a really important place to start this morning. We'll get to much more on the changes to state mask guidelines in just a moment. But first, after a brief stoppage in fighting overnight, violence continues between Israel and Hamas. And now Lebanon this morning. Smoke clouds and flames could be seen rising from Gaza buildings at sunrise following overnight attacks from Israeli warplanes. This while sirens blared through an Israeli city near the Gaza border. Warning of a Hamas rocket attack. The Israeli military says close to 90 rockets were launched from Gaza overnight, bringing the total to more than 3,300 since the conflict began last week. Israeli forces also reported a shelling of Lebanon last night in retaliation for 6 rockets fired toward Israel. Tensions have been high at the Israeli-Lebanese border, where protesters have come out in support of the Palestinians. After a meeting with top defense officials, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said yesterday that Israel would, quote, continue to strike terror targets for as long as necessary. Gaza's health ministry says 212 people have been killed since airstrikes began last week, including 61 children. Israeli officials have reported 10 deaths, with 2 being children. Willie.
Meanwhile, in a call with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, the White House says President Biden, quote, expressed support for a ceasefire. According to a White House readout of that call, the president, quote, reiterated his firm support for Israel's right to defend itself, while also, quote, encouraging Israel to make every effort to ensure the protection of innocent civilians. The carefully worded statement comes as a number of Democrats urge the president to speak out more forcefully against Israel. Joining us now, longtime foreign correspondent Martin Fletcher, who's reporting for NBC News in Tel Aviv. Martin, good morning. What's the very latest from where you're sitting?
Hi, Willie. Good morning, everybody. It was a fairly quiet night in most of the area, and then it suddenly took off in the morning with Israeli jet warplane attacks on Gaza, rockets from Gaza into Israel. You mentioned the new twist, if you like, which is the fact that rockets were fired from Lebanon towards Israel. It's actually the second time that's happened. 6 rockets fired from Lebanon towards Israel. Apparently, they all landed short, and Israel retaliated with artillery fire against the source of those rocket attacks. But the fear, of course, is that as long as there's no ceasefire, the greater the possibility of the conflict spreading, Lebanon being an obvious possibility of extra warfare here. So there's pressure building for a ceasefire, pressure also from the United States on Israel. But my political sources here told me, yes, there is pressure from America, but it's not what they call, quote, strong pressure. So Israel seems to have the green light from the United States to continue knocking off those targets that it has in Gaza, the tunnels, the homes and offices of Islamic military leaders in Gaza. And at the moment, there's no sign that there's any real movement towards a ceasefire from either side, Willie.
So, Martin, Joe Scarborough here, in calls over the past several days, it seems diplomats in the region, also foreign policy leaders in this country, keep quietly saying the same thing. We're focusing right now on Hamas. We're focusing right now on the missiles. But what the Israelis should be most concerned about is the civil unrest. Arabs make up 20%, obviously, of Israel. And the Arab Israelis and the Israelis for the first time inside the country really experiencing flashpoints. Can you talk about that and talk about the long-term danger that poses for the nation of Israel?
Absolutely, Joe. Look, as you indicate, look, this is the fifth round of fighting between Hamas and Israel in the last 15 years. So there's a certain cycle. Presumably, there'll be, unfortunately, going to be more dead on both sides. Then there'll be a ceasefire negotiated of some kind. And then the conflict will go on hiatus, if you like, till the next round. What is new is the fighting inside Israel between Israeli Arabs and Israeli Jews. And that is a very significant deterioration in relations inside a country that is extremely fragile based on that. On an easy relationship between Jews and Arabs that is now falling apart. Today, for instance, there's been a call for a general strike among Arabs on the West Bank and Arabs inside Israel. Arabs are gathering on street corners all over the area. There's been another terror attack foiled on the West Bank. There's eight terror attacks foiled on the West Bank in the last 3 days. So it's building up, and that the possibility of putting that genie back in the bottle, if you like, of Arab unrest against Israel. And not only Arab unrest against Israel, I have to point out, it's also Israeli unrest against the Arabs. These are basically mobs on both sides who are not fighting each other and mob against mob. It's both sides, Jews and Arabs, looking for easy targets, beating them up, in some places killing them. One Israeli Jew who was severely beaten a few days ago, he died. So that's one Israeli literally beaten to death by a Palestinian mob. And Palestinians have also been killed by Israelis. So this is an extremely tense, dangerous, volatile situation that is going to need some serious thought about how to get Jews and Arabs back on the same page inside Israel. And this is being played out, of course, in the attempt to form a new government. Prime Minister Netanyahu has gathered support from the right wing over the last several attempts to form governments, his fourth in 2 years, by whipping up discontent with the Arabs. And the Arabs feel disassociated from the country. This is not something that comes just from the violence in Gaza now. It's something that's been building up for many years, whipped up by right-wing politicians in Israel, and Arabs feeling disenchanted, separated from the state, losing their role. They're not so sure of their position inside the country anymore. They're young, they're angry, they're hopeless because many don't have jobs. This is a very volatile situation, Jews and Arabs inside Israel, that does not augur well for the future, Joe.
All right. Thank you so much, NBC News' Martin Fletcher. We greatly appreciate it. Be safe. Peter Baker, right now, obviously, the situation continues to move in an ominous direction. Most observers recognize this as a cynical play between Hamas and the Netanyahu government, who has been fomenting unrest even inside the country between Israeli Jews and Israeli Arabs for his own political benefit to try to stop those coalitions from coming together. That said, there are coalitions in the United States that are concerning to Joe Biden and the administration. Many people suggesting yesterday that the Biden administration was far more careful in confronting Netanyahu on about these scenes of these dead children being taken out of buildings and trying to call a ceasefire because he may not have the support in Congress to back him up in standing up to these attacks and to standing up to Netanyahu.
Yeah, the politics of this domestically for President Biden are pretty fraught, right? They're pretty difficult to navigate because the Democratic Party, while historically supportive of Israel, has, you know, evolved over recent years to being much more divided between those who think that Israel has gone too far and are more sympathetic to the Palestinian cause versus those who have been, you know, traditionally Israel's, you know, biggest supporters in the country. Whereas on the other side, you have the Republicans much, much more monolithically pro-Israel these days than in the past. So, you know, for Biden, then every word, every statement, every move is, you know, dissected and analyzed and subject to criticism from one part of his party or the other, depending on how far he leans this way or that way.
And, of course, over 3,000 Hamas rockets being fired, Peter, into Israel, and it continues well into the second week. The question is, how does Biden tell Netanyahu, how does he tell the Israelis to stand down while those missiles continue going in to Israel?
Well, he doesn't have a very warm relationship right now with Prime Minister Netanyahu. They have had their differences in the past, back when President Biden was the vice president and Senate Foreign Relations Chairman. Obviously, Prime Minister Netanyahu had a better friend, as he saw it, in President Trump. And so there's been this sort of kind of frosty start to this particular administration. President Biden even didn't even speak with Prime Minister Netanyahu for quite a while. He was not near the top of the list of the foreign leader calls he made when he came into office, and that was noticed, of course, in Jerusalem. So there isn't this sort of you know, strong relationship there to begin with. But obviously, President Biden, if he chooses to use them, has quite a few tools of leverage there. He, you know, America still remains a significant contributor of foreign aid to Israel, obviously a security partner to Israel. That a lot of the equipment that the military uses has been provided for or supported by American aid. And if he chose to use it, President Biden obviously has that pressure to use. But again, partly because of the domestic pressures at home, he hasn't chosen to use it yet. He's trying, I think, to take a little bit of a not hands off, but not completely hands on, you know, approach at this point. And we'll see whether that leads, because as has been said before, obviously the Americans don't have any kind of real contacts or connections with Hamas. So we're playing on one side, even as we try to, you know, use intermediaries to maybe reach out to the Gaza leadership there through, you know, the Egyptians or the Qataris or others. So it's a complicated situation. Biden would just as soon not be dealing with it. And so far, he's taken a kind of relatively light approach to it.
All right, Jane Harman, this brings us to you. Your book is Why Our Failure to Confront National Security Problems Makes Us Less Safe. Does this fit the bill here? And what nuances should the United States be considering to really deal with this constructively?
Well, thank you for that, Mika, and thank you for paving the way for the rest of us to write books, difficult, hard books. And this is my first and maybe my last try. It was a hard thing to do, another hard problem. Yeah. On this, I can think of a few things beyond what has been said already, and here they are. Number one, Bibi Netanyahu has two objectives. One is to survive politically and stay out of jail, and he's doing it. He has scrambled the effort by his opponents to form a new government. He was unable to do that after the fourth election, but now the coalition against him is falling apart. So I predict Israel will go to a fifth election. And if he wins that, I think everybody is exhausted. Then he will stay out of jail. Check that box. Other box is to thoroughly degrade Hamas by destroying the tunnels. Very tricky because they're under civilian buildings. And that was why the idea of going in on the ground was floated, because soldiers could go into the tunnels and blow them up. And this has been the way, let's be fair, that Hamas has smuggled in rockets and material to attack Israel. And I assume those rockets are coming from Iran, something that we're just talking about. So that's one thing. The second thing is Hezbollah on the Lebanese border. I've seen that movie. I was actually there during the Israel-Lebanon war with a group of members of Congress. Everyone thought we were crazy. The missiles were going overhead, and there we were. But at any rate, 100,000 plus missiles with precision-guided munitions, meaning they can hit their targets, and they're hidden under again, civilian buildings. The Lebanese are shields. And so all of this could be a bigger catastrophe than we're already talking about. And it's very tricky for everybody to navigate.
Jane, you've studied this problem very closely. You were the ranking member on the House Intel Committee. You worked with presidents. You've spent a lot of time abroad in the Middle East. How is it different now in your analysis than perhaps it was when you were working the problem in the 90s and in the 2000s, after 9/11 even? What does it look like to you, and is it more intractable today than it was even then?
I would say it's more intractable, sadly. Social media, chapter seven in my book is called The Incredible Disappearing Congress, Incredible Shrinking Congress. Congress is so much less of a factor. It's the far left, the far right, and no middle. And Congress used to speak more or less with one voice on foreign policy, which has hobbled us in addition. And I'd say the third thing is the problems are just the breakdown of the nuclear deal with Iran, which I thought was sad. I thought President Trump should have stayed in it and made it stronger. The worry about Afghanistan, I support the Biden administration changing our mission, not leaving Afghanistan, but getting our troops out. But the emergence of the new Abraham Accords, have we noticed that the Sunni Arab states are saying nothing here? Mahmoud Abbas not having any real power over Hamas. I would guess in his secret heart, he's happy to have Hamas degraded. And all of these factors just make solving this problem much harder.
Eugene Daniels, on the concept of Congress speaking in one voice about this, what does it take to get there and what impact could that have?
It's just so hard to see them getting to that one voice really on anything, right? At this point, and it's been said before, that the left and the Democrats have a different conversation happening than the Republicans are. On the Republican side, you know, it feels very much like years past where any kind of support for Palestine is basically a third rail. It's a no-no. On the left, with Democrats, that is not the case anymore, right? You are seeing people come to the House floor speaking with such passion against Israel in a way that you hadn't in such a long time. So Biden's dealing with this party who's having its own dynamics and changing dynamics on the issue. And I think that's part of the reason why you're already seeing kind of, if not waffling, this kind of soft touch diplomacy and conversations that he's doing. They want him to be doing more. And he knows that with Israel being one of the, one of our strongest allies in the Middle East, how much money that we give them. There are people who say, well, yeah, we should be using all of that aid as some kind of leverage. And that is something that you would not have heard any politician in Congress say a long time ago, right? This is a White House that foreign policy-wise, they wanted to concentrate on China. They wanted to focus on Russia. And so dealing with this right now, kind of so early on in the administration, something I don't think they were expecting. And so they're trying to figure out and navigate what the changing dynamics in Congress, because that isn't just because the dynamics have changed in Congress, that doesn't mean they've changed elsewhere, right? And so that is how where the issues really, really lie.
All right, still ahead on Morning Joe, the Biden administration ramps up coronavirus vaccine diplomacy, promising to send another 20 million doses overseas. Plus, the president is hitting the road to Michigan in an effort to promote his infrastructure plan as Republicans prepare another counteroffer. You're watching Morning Joe. We'll be right back.
The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, responds to emergencies and provides long-term solutions for refugees. They provide aid in over 130 countries, including Ukraine, Syria, Afghanistan, and Sudan, where people are forced to flee from war and persecution at their greatest moment of need. UNHCR helps and protects refugees by providing food, shelter, medical care, and other life-saving essentials. The agency jumpstarts relief in three key ways. They transport core relief items stored in even the most remote areas of the world. They deploy expert emergency staff trained to help in crisis situations. And they transfer funds directly to support the emergency. Because of generous supporters and donors, UNHCR can scale up its response within 72 hours of a large-scale emergency. Your support helps provide life-saving aid for refugees whenever and wherever emergencies occur. Donate to USA for UNHCR by visiting unrefugees.org/donation.
A major shift in the guidance on how to protect yourself through all this. The CDC now saying people should use cloth face coverings when going outside.
The federal government is now recommending Americans wear a non-surgical mask or face covering in public.
President Trump says he is not going to wear a mask, despite the CDC's new recommendation that Americans should do it.
I think wearing a face mask as I greet presidents, prime ministers, dictators, kings, queens. I don't know. Somehow, I don't see it for myself.
I had one on before. I wore one in this back area, but I didn't want to give the press the pleasure of seeing it.
There are a lot of people think the masks are not good. And there are a lot of people that, as an example,
who are those people?
Well, I'll tell you who those people are. Waiters.
I wish he would stop talking and let the scientists speak. I don't walk out of this house without a mask on.
Let the president start by sending that signal very simply. Just wear the mask.
The president didn't take it seriously. McConnell has not taken it seriously. But we can stop this if we follow the science.
You see, Willie, where Trump was saying, or Mika, where Trump was saying, it just doesn't make sense for presidents, prime ministers, dictators. I don't know.
Wannabe dictators, really dumb wannabe dictators.
And waiting, people are trying to, just insanity. But yeah,
that was that.
Joe Biden and Democrats are saying, follow the science. And I couldn't agree more. Follow the science and what the CDC says.
Yes. And that is what most Democratic leaders were saying a year ago when it came to listening to the CDC in terms of wearing a mask. But now there's this inconsistency in which states are allowing for the new CDC guidelines for fully vaccinated people to stop wearing masks. It's confusing. President Joe Biden yesterday announced that for the first time, COVID cases are down in all 50 states, and 60% of Americans have received at least one vaccine dose, which is amazing news. But New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says it's too soon to drop his state's indoor public mask rules. New Jersey will continue to require all people, vaccinated or not, to keep wearing masks indoors in public, making it the only state in the Northeast not to adopt the new CDC mask guidance. Governor Murphy says the state is just not ready.
We've been clobbered not once, but twice. We've lost over 26,000 people. We know the virus is more lethal indoors. And you're asking somebody who's at the hardware store working there or in a retail or a grocery store to make the judgment on who's vaccinated, who's not. We're not there yet. We're close.
But, right. This is your home state, Willie.
Proudly.
434 cases in the entire state last week. Those cases have continued to decline. The CDC guidance says if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask indoors. The CDC director saying, hey, it's time to go back to living normal the way you did before. And Scott Gottlieb saying, hey, if we don't lift these mask mandates now, when we're having a break, we're not going to have the credibility to reinstitute them in the fall if there is a spike. And we do need them reimplemented, but there's not a spike. Over 60% of Americans have at least one vaccination. I guess it's easy to complain from the cheap seats here, but follow the science. If we're telling governors to follow the CDC for a year when Donald Trump's president of the United States, shouldn't they follow the CDC guidance when Joe Biden's president of the United States?
Absolutely. And actually, in the state of New Jersey, almost 70%, or maybe it's pushed even over a little since I last looked, 70% of adults in New Jersey have at least one dose of the vaccine. So, I mean, you're getting up into where we heard about herd immunity numbers several months ago. And also what's interesting is New Jersey has acted sort of in concert with New York, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut over this last year or so. They've been taking their cues from each other because the numbers were so bad here. Well, New York announced yesterday that starting tomorrow, it's going to follow the CDC guidelines, take off the masks. Pennsylvania did that a long time ago. Connecticut did it a long time ago. So the numbers actually in New Jersey are pretty good. So this is a curious move by Governor Murphy, and he does really stand alone. I mean, he's not working with Governor Cuomo. He's not working with Governor Lamont in Connecticut anymore on this. He's looking and saying, I don't think we're out of the woods. But if you look at the numbers, if this isn't out of the woods, it's hard to see where it would be. And I would just say, good luck getting people to wear masks through Memorial Day weekend at the Jersey Shore. I think this just isn't going to hold up.
Yeah. I mean, and Mika, the thing is, and I think, Mika, you and I may have a difference of opinion here, but again, there are two things I think that public health officials need to be concerned about. One of them is, again, the vaccination rate. Boy, we should all wish we were doing as well as New Jersey. If we could get that 60% over 70% like New Jersey, we are moving towards herd immunity. That's the first thing. The second thing is, mental health. I've been talking about it now for well over a month. We have got to get this country going again and back to normal. We were saying it several months ago when Anthony Fauci said, get the kids back in school. That's the top priority. Now the CDC is saying, go back to living your normal lives. This is needed for a lot of reasons. We can talk about business. That's one big part of it. We can talk about restaurants. We can talk about family businesses that have been absolutely shattered by this. But we also need to talk about mental health. We have to have a return to normalcy. And when the CDC is saying return to normal and vaccinations are skyrocketing up over 60%, we need to return to normal for so many reasons.
I hear everything you're saying, and I do think, though, there needs to be some clarity that there are some pockets of the country that may not be ready. I'm here in Washington. In many ways, I'm here doing Know Your Value interviews, but I am working with a team here, and there is one person on the team who is not vaccinated. I'm wearing a mask around that person. You know, it is really, if you want to follow the science, then there are times you need to still wear the mask. And that's where I think it gets really confusing as we try and move forward as a country and put this pandemic behind us. The other thing is, this pandemic is not behind us globally. And that means that we could run into problems again. You never know. If you're looking at the science and you're looking at breakthrough cases and you're looking at other strains, it's not completely behind us. And that's why I think this can be very confusing along the way. Some states are following more slowly. In California, those who are fully vaccinated will be able to go indoors without a mask starting on June 15th. State officials are delaying the move by a month to get vaccination rates higher and businesses more time to figure out how to verify whether people are in fact vaccinated. And until June 15th, masks are still required indoors. Fully vaccinated individuals do not have to wear masks outdoors, except in crowded settings. In Massachusetts, Fenway Park and TD Garden will reopen with no capacity restrictions starting on May 29th. The move coincides with Governor Charlie Baker's announcement that the state is on track to vaccinate over 4 million residents by the first week of June. Fenway Park seats over 37,000 fans when sold out. And as Willie said, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that tomorrow, New York will adopt the CDC's new mask and social distancing guidance for fully vaccinated residents. Masks will still be required on public transit, in nursing homes, schools, and healthcare facilities across the state. Private venues can still impose additional mask rules as they see fit. Despite the new mask rules going into effect tomorrow for New York State, Morning Joe chief medical correspondent Dr. Dave Campbell found out that many fully vaccinated New Yorkers are reluctant to give up the mask, even outdoors, and city officials are fine with letting people go at their own pace.
The tricky part is you don't know who has vaccinated and who hasn't.
It's going to take a while. I mean, I think it took a while for people to get comfortable wearing masks.
Working here at the farmer's market, I had a couple experiences of people coming up unmasked. It was a little shocking. We need to take our time to kind of come out of this, I think.
Are people going to trust each other in your restaurant?
I don't think so. Someone walks in without a mask claiming they're vaccinated. How do you know?
Ever since I got vaccinated, I don't feel the pressure to wear a mask outside anymore, especially then once the CDC said vaccinated individuals don't need to wear masks.
Yeah.
But then this is confusing because you don't know who's vaccinated and who's not.
I think in places like this where it does get a little bit crowded and I notice there are more at-risk individuals, I'll tend to keep it on just for others' sake, but also my sake.
Personally, I'm a lot more comfortable when I'm out in big public groups when I'm wearing a mask.
I'm trusting science right now. I'm hoping things like really work out for the best at the end of the year.
I have the vaccine, but maybe somebody else doesn't have it. And it's a good incentive.
I'm a little bit scary, actually, because I'm fully vaccinated. I see the news about the Yankees sports team had an outbreak, even though they got the vaccine. So I was a little bit scared.
We spoke to the health commissioner and the mayor to bring clarity to New Yorkers during this transitional time.
Even though I know that I have protection because I'm fully vaccinated, there are some settings where it will be harder for me to shed, you know, the habit of wearing my mask. I think we have to allow people to move at their own pace because there is the rational science part of this, but there's also just the very human side of people making their way through the challenges that we've been through over the last few months.
There are a lot of younger people that I talk to throughout my day-to-day activities at home that they're still a little hesitant.
I think the CDC sent a powerful message. It said, if you are vaccinated, you can start to act differently, particularly outside. But with the clear boundaries, if you're in a hospital setting or a nursing home, a school, if you're places where people are tightly packed, mass transit, it's still smart to have the mask on. I think that's common sense. But remember, it's if you are vaccinated, you get more freedom. If you aren't vaccinated, you have to deal with those risks still.
Do I want to wear a mask on the subway and transportation for the rest of my life? Yes.
If it's dense areas, I still feel comfortable, even though I'm vaccinated, I'm still personally comfortable keeping it on.
What are the political issues at play right now as it relates to masks and vaccinations that you're part of?
I think we got to start with the CDC. The CDC was constrained and politicized by Trump. It has now been professionalized by Biden. It's actual doctors saying what they think makes sense. When you're dealing with a global pandemic, your national government's supposed to lead the way. We didn't have that in the previous administration. We have it now. CDC saying now is the time. And I really respect that. They did it based on the data and the science. I believe in the CDC. Today's CDC. I think the vast majority of my fellow Democrats do as well. Yet all life is lived locally. I respect anyone who says, we want to take a little more time. We want to be a little more cautious. Anyone who still wants to be careful and cautious, we've got to show them the respect. Let them take their time to get to the point that they need to be more comfortable. I think that's only fair.
I mean, I'm looking at this. Great job by Dr. Dave, as usual. A lot of masks outside in New York City. A lot of masks. And here's, I'm with Bill de Blasio here. Everybody needs to go at their own pace. That's fine. But states and localities, they need to follow the CDC and lift the mask mandates. Willie, this is just like so many other things. People have forgotten how to be courteous with other people. I still carry a mask around. I don't wear it inside. Maybe things are going to get really crowded. But if I see somebody inside wearing a mask and I get close to them, I'll put it on. Not for me, but to make them feel more comfortable. Like, we can do things like that. We can make that decision to be courteous. But again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but if you're going to follow masks, if you're going to follow CDC guidelines, and if we're going to lecture Trump for a year that he needs to follow CDC guidelines, well, these governors that were attacking Trump for a year need to follow CDC guidelines. And the thought that New Jersey still shut down with over 70% vaccination rate and their cases plummeting, the fact that California is not going to lift their mandates for another month after the CDC said, go back to living normal, I don't know. I don't know what that is. Maybe that's virtue signaling. There certainly was virtue signaling from the other side, trashing mask stands and things like that. Oh, dear Lord. But whatever it is, again, people live and let live. Whatever they want to do is fine. But these government entities, from New Jersey to California, they need to follow the science. They need to follow the CDC.
Well, yeah, and the explanation has just been it doesn't feel right yet. We've been struck before. We've been burned before. But you got to look at the science. You have to look at the evidence, as you're saying, and as the CDC told us last week about whether or not it's safe. I go out and run in New York City almost every day. Beautiful day in Central Park. It's a beautiful week here. I do see fewer and fewer masks outside. Just yesterday, not a ton of masks. Some people have them. And again, if you get close to somebody, you're in tight quarters, you put on your mask, if, you know, out of, as you say, out of basic respect and basic courtesy for someone else. And again, we should point out the businesses, whether it's Best Buy or Costco or a restaurant or a hardware store, they have the right to have a policy that says, look, if you want to come in here for now, you still have to wear a mask. That's their right. But what you're talking about, what we're talking about, is the state level guidance. And it is important to point out that New Jersey, in this area anyway, stands alone, that New York has moved on, that Pennsylvania and Connecticut have moved on based on the numbers, based on the science, which aren't all that different from the state of New Jersey. And Peter Baker, this announcement yesterday, or excuse me, last week from the CDC, in many ways actually caught the White House off guard. And we've seen some fumbling even at the top of the CDC about what exactly they mean when they say you can take off the mask. Dr. Walensky took a step back a couple of days ago and said, well, this doesn't mean people should go inside and rip their masks off. And everyone said, wait, I thought that was exactly what it meant as long as I was vaccinated. So how is the White House sort of managing this flow of information and this guidance from the federal level down to the states?
Yeah, they were caught off guard by this. A number of White House officials didn't even know it was coming until the public announcement of it, basically. But you're seeing, I think, a White House that is still struggling to make sure that it itself is sending the right signal, right? The president has begun taking his mask off in order to say, you know, he's following the CDC guidelines. They've now sent out a message to White House staff, changing the rules inside the West Wing. You know, for months, basically, this Biden team has been sitting in its offices inside the White House, meeting with each other through Zoom, you know, not allowed to actually be in each other's presence for more than a small amount of time. So they're trying to now adjust their own rules in order to send a message to the rest of the country that we are beginning to move on. But it's a confused time. It's a confused time, obviously. We're in this sort of interim, you know, period between when the pandemic was at its worst and when it will fade even further, when we don't know which store we can go into, which city has which rules, which state has which rules. If you travel, what does that mean? And it's kind of a muddle. And the federal government and the White House haven't provided a consistent enough message to, I think, get through to many people. And as you say, because different states are going to take different actions, that doesn't help them. This may be a little bit like Asia, though. If anybody who's traveled in Asia in recent years will see that a lot of people there wear masks long after SARS went away. That became kind of a permanent cultural change for a lot of people in Asia, just to simply wear masks in public, even when there wasn't a particular outbreak at the moment. And it may be that we see a little of that here in the United States, or at least pockets of the United States, where masks become kind of a perennial thing, even without a particular health risk at the moment. And by the way, if you wear a mask, that may actually, you know, be preventative for other kinds of illnesses. Look how much flu has gone down in the last year. Look how much other diseases, communicable diseases, have been stemmed to some extent by the public health measures we took in order to combat COVID. It wouldn't surprise me to see masks being a kind of permanent part of the American, ethos, at least in parts of the country, for some people for a while.
Yeah. And again, that should be up to individuals to make that decision, what they want to do, live their lives the way they want to live their lives. If we've moved past CDC guidelines and they want to wear a mask still, that's up to them. And as Willie said, if small businesses, if restaurants want to still require masks, yeah, I'll be honest with you, that's a pain. But that's up to them to make that business decision for themselves. It's the government entities, though, that need to follow CDC guidelines. Jane, you know, California, you're a Californian. Boy, that is a state that's had a tell of about three or four pandemics. I mean, right after the pandemic began last spring, they seem to be doing better than everybody else. Then the numbers exploded, and it's gone back and forth. Now they're talking about waiting another month before following CDC guidelines. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was in California for the worst of it over Christmas time and about 6 months before, and it was very difficult to see my own grandchildren and so forth. And there's a homeless problem on top of it. Let's go there. My thoughts are kind of like Mika's, that this is going to be and needs to be a gradual reentry. And let's point something else out, Joe. It's not just in the U.S. I know rates are going down somewhat in all 50 states. That's great news. But let's think about the world, and let's think about travel to the U.S. from the world and the opportunity we have using pandemic diplomacy, which is a pillar of the new Biden foreign policy, which I strongly support, to help the rest of the world with our vaccines and our logistics and our other technology. And if we don't do that, we've missed an opportunity to reengage in a way that Joe Biden wants to.
So, Eugene, what stories are you covering today? What are you expecting to happen on the Hill?
Well, first you have infrastructure, right? You have Mayor Pete meeting with, oh, excuse me, Secretary Pete. I called him Mayor Pete for so long. Secretary Pete Buttigieg meeting with some Republicans. And what we're expecting is finally to see what their kind of final go at this for on the Republican side. There's been negotiations back and forth kind of about what stays, what goes. I am shocked that I'm even saying this. It's possible that they're actually maybe a bipartisan deal that could pass because you have Republicans who have in this $600 to $800 billion range of what they've been talking about. But then you have what was in the original plan from the White House on the hard infrastructure, right? The roads, the bridges, those kinds of things, kind of being around the same amount when you boil down that plan that President Biden released and has been talking about. And so that aspect of it is a lot more interesting. So that's something that people should keep an eye on because that conversation, you know, that's true. That was at one point trillions of dollars, and now it could be billions. But then what that means is that the White House and this administration are also going to have some more conversations within their own party about the social infrastructure, the care infrastructure that they've been talking about, something that they're most likely going to have to do without any kind of Republican votes at all, if they were actually get some of that done. So there's a lot moving in that direction, as well as everything else that everyone's been talking about today.
All right. Eugene Daniels, Peter Baker, and former Congresswoman Jane Harman, thank you very much for being on this morning. Jane's new book is Insanity Defense: Why Our Failure to Confront Hard National Security Problems Makes Us Less Safe. And Jane, congratulations on that.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
And to some business headlines now. Nearly 3 years after AT&T rattled the entertainment business by merging with Time Warner, the telecommunications company is doing it again. Yesterday, AT&T announced it will spin off Warner Media and combine it with Discovery Communications. The deal would create a new company valued at over $150 billion, including debt, making it the second largest media company by revenue. It still needs to be approved by regulators. If approved, the deal is expected to close in the middle of 2022. This morning, Lamborghini announced plans to transition to a fully electric car by 2030. The company says it will produce hybrid vehicles over the next decade as it makes that transition. Lamborghini hopes to reduce its CO2 emissions by 50% by the beginning of 2025. Yeah. By the way, Joe.
Yeah, Willie, guys, this is great news for Donnie Deutsch. Now, as he flies around in the Hamptons going 95 miles an hour through cornfields, he can feel socially conscious.
Right.
That he's going to be, it's going to be an electric vehicle. And I maybe he moves away, I don't know, from the powder-blued vehicle that has in script on the side, Double D. But still, this is a good move for the environment. It may even be good news for the people of East Hampton. What do you think?
As I listened to that story, I thought this is important news you can use for 14 people on Earth who have Lamborghinis.
Yeah.
yes, Donnie, you know what else Donnie does, which is an important part of his game, is he puts a car seat with a baby doll in it, so he looks like a loving father. But the problem is he puts it in shotgun of the Lambo when he's driving through East Hampton.
Yep. Next to a dog in the back seat.
Exactly.
And he has a pink one, a Barbie Lamborghini, with bling. But he can add the electric to his fleet.
Yeah, I did not know until I met Donnie that there's actually a service where you can rent out children and walk them around to try to attract other people, like to seem like a more loving and sensitive parent. It's maybe that's a New York thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Double stroller.
He doesn't need to rent them. All right. The conservative social networking site Parler is back in the Apple App Store with a new CEO. The company named prominent UK conservative George Farmer its chief executive as it works to rebuild its reputation after the January 6th Capitol riot. Parler executives say new guidelines have been established to ensure the site won't be used as a, quote, tool for crime or unlawful acts. We'll look forward to looking into more of that. That's responsible, I hope.
Wait.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so let me ask, does that also apply, Willie, to Facebook? Will Facebook now take that same guideline and stop being used to promote crimes? Because you look at the insurrection, you look at the assassination of the federal agent by a right-wing extremist in Oakland during the Black Lives Matters protests. In both cases, it was Facebook that pushed a lot of people to those sites.
Yeah, I mean, this is a front and center the last couple of weeks with the decision from that advisory panel about whether or not President Trump should remain suspended 6 more months, then they kick it back to Facebook. So we'll see, I guess, then if Facebook makes a policy about what can and cannot exist on its site. But so far, not much from the top there.
I mean, really, we're still waiting? They're pathetic. Coming up, the latest on the charade of a recount in Arizona that has grown so farcical, many Republicans are now calling it out. That conversation is straight ahead on Morning Joe.
When news breaks, go beyond the headlines with the new MSNBC app. Get real-time analysis from live blogs to in-depth essays, video highlights from your favorite shows and hosts, and the latest updates on the 2024 election. Go beyond the what to understand the why. Download the app now at msnbc.com/app.